Welcome to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. I'm Sarah of the blog Sarah's Bookshelves. Each week, I'm talking with one bookish guest about two old books they love, two new books they love, one book they don't love, and one new release they're excited about. We're going to get real and sometimes a little bit snarky about all things books. This is a brand new podcast, so if you like it, I'd really love your support. Please spread the word to your reader friends, subscribe to the show, and rate and review it wherever you listen to podcasts. Rating, reviewing, and subscribing really helps new listeners find us. All right, let's get rolling. Hey, everyone. I'm so excited to talk to y'all this week. Before we get to our guest, I have one quick housekeeping item to go over. I have a reader survey up on the blog right now, and I will link to it in the show notes. This is the second year in a row that I've done a reader survey, and I especially want y'all, my podcast listeners, to fill it out if you have a moment, because obviously this podcast is fairly new, and I am really interested to hear your feedback so I can know how to tweak things moving forward, what you like, what you don't like, what you want more of, what you want less of, what you want to stay exactly the same, guests you would like to hear on, and topics you'd like to hear us talk about. So if you could take a moment to do that, I would be so thankful. And again, the link is in will be in the show notes on the blog. All right. This week we have Kelly, otherwise known as the Well-Read Runner on Bookstagram, and she is joining me from Rochester, New York. She used to have a book blog called The Well-Read Redhead, which is a mouthful, but also like one of the best blog names ever.
Thank you.
As you can imagine, Kelly's a redhead.
That is indeed true.
And she talked books and running on the blog, but now she kind of has moved over to solely doing that on Instagram, as a lot of people are doing. And she's a triathlete as well.
That's right. Doing my best.
I know. I love seeing all your Instagram pictures. I used to be a triathlete until I threw out my back. So I love seeing you still at it, even though you're injured at the moment. And all the running you do you listen to audiobooks?
So I really don't. And people are usually surprised when they hear me say that. But I have a hard time listening to audiobooks when I run, because I like to be able to listen to something that I can kind of tune in and out at will and not feel like I'm going to be missing anything. I think you talked with Tara about this.
Yes, I did.
From running and reading. I remember that. And I was like, yes, that's exactly how I feel, because I hate it when I'm listening to an audiobook and then I kind of drift off while I'm running, and then all of a sudden I've missed some major plot point and now I have to go back. And it's a lot easier for me to listen to podcasts.
Yes.
Not that what people say on podcasts isn't important, but you can catch up on the conversation if you zone out for a minute or two.
I feel the exact same way. I tried to listen to audiobooks when I was training for a half marathon, and it didn't go well.
Yeah. Yeah. Same for even for short distances. If I try, you know, I'll do a short run on the treadmill and I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to re-listen to that whole chapter.
And who has the time for that?
No, I don't.
No. All right. Let's flip over to books now.
Okay.
So I wanted to talk about TBR lists today, because I feel like it is still early enough in the year where people are still planning their TBR list, but also far enough into the year where said TBR list might be mushrooming a little bit out of control.
Yes.
At least mine is.
Mine is too.
So let's talk about TBR lists. Let's talk about how they're kind of overwhelming and all these overwhelming possibilities, and how we can actually try to make them useful to us. So do you keep a TBR list?
I don't have one specific TBR list that I always use. I've used Goodreads since the beginning of Goodreads, and I have, you know, my to read list in Goodreads, but I think I looked yesterday and I think it's up to 465 books.
Oh, wow.
I did cull through it last year at one point and say, like, I just need to get rid of some of these, but I kind of use it as somebody mentions a book to me, oh, I'll throw it on the list and I can look it up later if I want to.
Right.
So using that, though, as a way to prioritize my TBR is not useful at this point because it's just so large.
Sure. Do you try to prioritize your TBR or not really?
Usually what I'll do, I find myself trying to join certain challenges or different reading prompts or something like that throughout the year just to help me have some sort of organization to how I want to read, because I always have so many things that I want to be reading that it kind of helps me pare it down and focus on just one genre for a while, or, oh, I have to find a book with the word light in the title, great, let me go through my list and find one. You know, it kind of helps me focus it a little bit more. So I do tend to jump into those once in a while.
So when you do a challenge, do you kind of use that as an overall structure for your reading? Like, I use my TBR list as that structure. It sounds like you might use reading challenge as a structure.
Yeah, if I feel like I can't decide what to read next, sometimes I'll jump in on a challenge. And I've done challenges where it's like, try to read at least one author with a last name that begins with each letter of the alphabet throughout the year. And it's like, all right, I can, you know, that's an easy way for me to mix it up and still read from a lot of different genres and not have to be super picky.
Sure.
But I'm also not great at completing any of these challenges.
Well, some of them are really long.
Some of them are really long. I tried to do the Pop Sugar Challenge last year.
Yep.
And I was doing great for a while. And then I was like, oh, these are getting really specific. And I don't want to be this specific in how I choose my books.
Sure. You want to still read books you want to read, not just something, some random category that happens to be on a challenge.
Right. Exactly. So, I tend to use them for a while. And then maybe, you know, I'll read a thriller and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I want to read more of these. And then I'll end up on a thriller kick for 3 months. And then I need something different. So I'll find another way to choose something new. And
yeah,
I'm kind of all over the place with that.
Do you listen to the Readerly Report podcast?
I do.
So did you hear their discussion about the Pop Sugar Reading Challenge?
I did.
Gail just was not on board at all, but I think she's going to give it a go.
Yes, I'm interested to see how it goes for her. Like I said, I tried last year, and some of the topics, they're so wide-ranging that if you just read what you normally read, you can probably fit books in to the challenge.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I was doing at the beginning. But then some of the prompts are so specific. I'm like, I don't know if I want to go out and look for that. And it can be kind of a drag after a while.
Well, and it's also like, what's the point?
Yeah.
Do I really care if I read a book with a red cover?
Right. Or a book about Halloween.
Right.
Yeah. I felt the same way.
But I do care if I read, let's say the prompt is a book that's been on your TBR list longer than 3 years or something like that. That does seem to have a purpose for me.
I love those challenges. I'm actually trying. Okay, so now the ones I'm doing now.
Yeah, what are your favorite ones? Tell me that.
If you look up the hashtag, the Unread Shelf Challenge, I'm working on that because my bookshelves at home are out of control. They always have been.
Yep.
And every year I say I'm going to try to read them down. And then I go to the library and I check out like 10 books and I ignore everything at home. So I'm trying really hard to do that challenge this year.
So your bookshelves at home are also another TBR list you have.
Yeah.
An especially physical and large one.
Exactly. I don't even count my Kindle because I'm like, oh, they're all on my Kindle. They're not taking up any space. So I don't have to worry about those. It's these that are all over the shelves in my house.
Right. All right. So tell me about the challenges that you're doing right now that you like.
So the Unread Shelf Challenge, she has a different prompt every month. You pick a book that's on your shelf that fills that prompt. So I believe this month it's a book you received as a gift.
Yep.
So you pick the book that fits the challenge at the beginning of the month. And then if you don't read that book by the end of the month, you have to donate it, give it away, get it off your shelf.
Oh,
yeah.
That's
interesting. So there's that extra motivation there. So I'm enjoying that so far because I don't want to just give something away without reading it first.
Well, it's also going to Marie Kondo your house in the process.
Yes. And surprisingly enough, I Marie Kondoed my books last year and I gave away like 200 of them to the library, and I still have way too many in here. Yeah, so I'm working on it. These are still sparking joy.
Sparking joy.
They're still here.
And they get to stay. Well, I've seen the Unread Shelf Challenge around Instagram here and there. So I haven't paid super close attention to it, but I love that structure of that challenge.
Yes, I do too.
All right, so I'm going to tell you a little bit about my TBR list because I've done it differently the past 2 years, and I think it's working for me.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. But prior to the past 2 years, I kept just a running spreadsheet where I added books when I heard about them and they sounded interesting. I never deleted anything off of the spreadsheet unless I read it. And this was going on for years and years.
Sounds like my Goodreads list.
Exactly. I mean, I had hundreds and hundreds of books on it.
Mm-hmm.
So 2 years ago, I deleted the spreadsheet.
Was it liberating?
Yes. Yeah. So here's what I do now. So because I run the blog, I do sort of read on a schedule by publication date.
Mm-hmm.
So I have, it's basically an email draft that I save in my drafts folder. And it has every month and all the books that I am interested in reading that are coming out in that month. And, you know, which ones I have in ARC form, etc. Then I have a category for possible summer books. And these are books that I think might be good candidates for my summer reading guide that I do every year.
Okay. I love that guide.
Oh, thank you. And then I have a category for nonfiction. A lot of it ends up being audio.
Okay.
Because I only listen to nonfiction on audio. So it's basically books that I would like to listen to on audio or that I'm saving for nonfiction November.
Okay.
Then I have a category for backlist. And then I have a category for must try before the end of the year. And these are books that are released in the current year that I bypassed during the month they came out for whatever reason, but I've heard a lot of good things about and I want to make sure and fit them in before the end of the year.
Okay.
So those are my categories. Every year I start a new list.
Good idea.
Yeah. So it's basically a clean slate. And then I'll look back to last year's list. I'll look at each book and decide whether I'm still interested in reading that book. And I have to be really interested in reading that book for it to then get transferred to the next year's list.
Right.
So I feel like it's becoming a little bit more manageable and less overwhelming. And I've also found that if I take books, like I remember some books that were on my huge spreadsheet that I deleted, and they've come back around to me and gone back on the backlist TBR list. And I feel like if a book's really, really good and really going to be calling out to you, it will come back around.
I agree. I've found that a lot because there'll be a book that, again, it ends up on my Goodreads list and I forget about it because it's so long. And then people will mention it to me over, have you read this? Have you read this? And then finally I'm like, well, yeah, I'm going to read it because so many people are talking about it. So that ends up mattering more than whether I actually put it on my list.
Right. And some things I put on my list and I can't even remember what they're about, why they're on there.
Yep.
And that tells me, okay, I'm not really that interested in that. And it goes away with the purge.
Yes. That's a good Marie Kondo way of sparking joy in your TBR every year. Yeah, just start clean slate. That's great.
I don't know if it sparks joy, but it keeps me my head above water, I guess.
Yeah. It can be overwhelming. There's so many good books to read in so little time.
All right, let's go on to your recommendations.
Okay.
Let me explain how this works, just in case we have new listeners, which I hope we do. Kelly's going to share two old books she loves, two new books she loves, one book she did not love, and one upcoming release that she's excited about.
All right. I'm ready.
So let's talk about your first old book you loved.
The first old book I loved, and I told you this was hard for me because picking only two old books is, that's pretty tough from all the backlists.
Every single guest I've had on has said that. Like, I can't pick just two.
It's like everything I've read since I was a kid, and I have to only pick two. But the first one I picked was The Three by Sarah Lotz.
Yep.
It was released back in 2014. And have you read this one?
I have. And I remember thinking it was the weirdest book I'd ever read, but I could not put it down.
Yes. It is kind of weird. But I enjoy weird. So I think it worked for me. So I'll give a little summary of it first. Basically, there's four planes that crash on the same day around the world, and the news starts calling it Black Thursday. There's only one survivor in each location. Three of them are kids. So it immediately stirs up this controversy of, you know, people speculating, well, why are there only these one survivors? What's up with these kids? And there was the fourth survivor only lived long enough to transmit this quick message out before she passed away. What was that message about? So there's a lot of speculation about how these four plane crashes are all connected. The child survivors, when they come back to their families, aren't acting like they used to act. So you've got that whole creepy kid aspect. Creepy kids are just creepy.
They're everywhere too. I feel like they're in a lot of books and movies and TV shows.
Yeah, they're just, there's no other word for it. It was just creepy. But the book is told in, it's an epistolary novel. Yeah. So it's put together by interviews that were done with the survivors and their families, chat logs between different characters. So it's not just a straight up novel. You get a lot of different perspectives. And I always like books like that, that kind of mix up the style and how it's told.
Yeah.
So I think that was a big draw for me too. And it makes it read faster.
Totally.
Because each part is pretty short. So you're kind of putting it all together as you go.
I loved that structure of the book.
I did too. I think that's one big reason why I didn't want to put it down, because you'd finish reading one little interview and want to know how it was connected to the next thing. And
right.
You would just keep going with it. So I heard a lot of people talk about this as a horror novel. And I don't know if I'd necessarily say horror, because when I say that, I think of like Stephen King and Blood and Guts.
I did not think it was horror.
I didn't either. It was definitely more insidious than that, where it kind of creeps up on you.
I would say creepy rather than horror.
Yes, creepy. I agree. A big reason why I loved it is because the ending, which for me, I won't give anything away, but for me, from what I've seen in other reviews, that's the make or break for a lot of people, whether they enjoy the book or not. It leaves so much to think about and so much to discuss.
I can't remember the ending. Isn't that amazing? It's been so long since I read this, but offline, you're going to have to tell me the ending. Just remind me.
Okay, I will. I will. It was just a book that it had a really good way of kind of sucking you in. It was creepy, but sometimes you couldn't even figure out why it was creepy. And it moved really fast. And I recommend it to people all the time. And whether they end up loving it or hating it, we always have a lot to talk about. So it's definitely one of my favorites.
And I loved the focus on the media.
Yes.
There have been a couple other books sort of focusing on that since this one, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
Before the Fall by Noah Hawley.
Yes, I love that one too.
It also took a plane crash and then focused on how the media spun things and took things out of control after the plane crash.
Yes, that's a big part of this too, is you have people in religious cults that are saying that it happened for this reason, and people in the government saying it happened for another reason, and it stirs up this whole worldwide scandal. It almost becomes dystopian.
A little bit.
Towards the middle, yeah. So it does add a lot to it when you kind of see how everything gets stirred up outside of just the survivors, how the world is dealing with this whole phenomenon. It's pretty neat.
I agree. So I just pulled up my review of this one.
Okay.
And what I said was, I felt like I was rubbernecking this book. I'm not sure I like it. I can't decide, but I can't stop looking.
Yes. No, I was sucked in the whole time, but I know some people are like, I don't know what I think about this book, but I think I like recommending it because I've gotten so many different reactions to how people like it or what they think of it. I mean, this would be an awesome book club book.
I was just thinking that.
Yeah, just discussing it with a large group of people, you'd have so many different opinions.
Right.
And there is a second book.
I was going to say, this is the first in a series, right?
Yeah, it's only two books right now.
Oh, okay. I think.
The other one is Day 4.
Did you read that one?
I did. It's not directly connected to what happens in the three, but it happens within the same world,
got
you would
it.
Say.
Okay.
That one deals with a cruise ship disaster gone awry. So similar sort of creepy feeling, but it's different subject matter. But you can read them separately, but you'll have a better appreciation for the second one if you've read the three first.
Got it. All right. That was The Three by Sarah Lotz. And tell me about the second old book you loved.
The second old book I loved is Where Men Win Glory by John Krakauer.
Yes.
He's one of my favorite nonfiction authors.
Mine too.
Anything that he writes.
Yeah.
This one came out back in 2009. John Krakauer loves to research the heck out of any topic that he tackles for a book. And this one particularly talks about Pat Tillman, the former Arizona Cardinals football player. He quit the Cardinals to join the Army after 9/11.
Yep.
And he was then killed by friendly fire in 2004 in Afghanistan. And there's a lot of controversy surrounding it because it wasn't originally reported as a friendly fire incident. So there were a lot of questions about, was the government covering up the fact that it was friendly fire and why were they doing that? But the way he talks about it is so much broader. I mean, he begins by going over historical aspects of the war in Afghanistan, Pat Tillman's personal story of growing up and his football career and how he decided to join the army and what drove him to do that. He prints a lot of his letters and journal entries to really give this very personal side of it. But then he also does delve into the, you know, what actually happened when he was over there and when he was killed. So he really pulls together such a complete picture of it. It's not just about this one man and this one incident that happened to him. It brings together so many different aspects of not only Pat Tillman's life, but different things about the war and aspects leading up to that. So I loved it. All of his books are like that, where he doesn't just tackle the one piece of it, but this one of all his books is definitely my favorite.
I really liked this one too. And Pat Tillman is a fascinating guy.
He is.
That part of that book, looking at his history and just how he was as a high school kid.
Yep.
I mean, he was not your average high school kid.
I agree. And I looked back at I reviewed this ages ago.
Right.
And I looked back at my review, and one of the big things I mentioned was I had to actually stop reading at certain points because you would just feel so much emotion reading about this guy.
Yes.
And what was driving him throughout his life and his career and then in the army. And it's a lot to take in, especially when you look at it within the circumstances of how he died.
Right.
It comes together so well in the book where it's not just a nonfiction where you're reading a bunch of facts and, you know, ho-hum, learning things. It's like it really created an emotional reaction for me. It's an awesome book.
And I feel like that's one of the reasons Krakauer is so good at what he does. He takes this issue that is out there in the world and, just like you said, researches the heck out of it. But then he also applies a very personal, emotional story to it. He uses, he drills down to a very few people that he can tell their story. You get emotionally invested in them, but they are also illustrating the broader issue.
Agreed. His latest one was Missoula, and that dealt more with sexual assault on college campuses. And he did the same thing with that, where he talked about the broader issue, but also made it a very personal narrative by speaking to survivors and people who had worked within that system. So
right.
It's definitely above and beyond your normal nonfiction.
Absolutely. My favorite of his is Under the Banner of Heaven.
I love that one too.
About an extreme offshoot of the Mormon faith.
Yeah, I read that one a long time ago, but I remember that one was a good one as well.
So that was Where Men Win Glory by John Krakauer. And tell us about the first new book you loved.
Both of my new books were actually the books I received from the Book of the Month Club in January, because I have been reading so much backlist lately that it was actually, I was looking at what my recent reads were and I was like, oh, these are the only two new releases that I've read.
Glad you liked both of them.
I did. They were both excellent. I actually chose the first one before I even thought about, you know, any of the others, because I knew that I wanted to mention it here because it was so good. And that one was Golden Child by Claire Adam.
Yep.
That one came out January 29th. It is literary fiction set in Trinidad, and it focuses on a family in Trinidad, the father, Clyde, the mom, Joy, and then they have two sons, Peter and Paul. And right from birth, Peter was always seen as the quote-unquote golden child. He was always super smart and, you know, ahead in school and good to his friends. And just, his parents were always very proud of him. Whereas Paul was always a little bit more behind. And over time, you kind of see how that changes their trajectories in life. Not just how they achieve on their own, but how they're perceived by their family and the people around them.
Right.
And it kind of culminates when Paul suddenly goes missing. And then the family is kind of sent into turmoil. And has to make a series of moral decisions about how to handle that. And it is really an excellent novel. I was sucked in from beginning to end, not just about the family and all of these dynamics between them, but the setting in this book is so important. And Claire Adam, I looked it up later, is actually from Trinidad. So it's a good reason why she's able to speak of it so clearly. But
right,
it plays such an important role in terms of the economics and the politics of the landscape and how that plays into the story. And it's heartbreaking in parts, but it was really an excellent, excellent novel.
Okay, two things about this one.
Sure.
Number one, isn't this a second book by Sarah Jessica Parker's imprint?
Yes. I don't know what the first one was, but when I got this one, I saw that on the listing for this, that it's
okay.
Part of her imprint.
The first one was A Place for Us.
Okay.
And that was last year. Secondly, I heard the ending of this book is a doozy.
It is.
And it's very divisive, right? Like you'll either love it or hate it.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't want to give anything
away. Don't spoil anything.
I won't. I'm not going to spoil anything, but it is a doozy. And like you said, people are either going to love it. I don't know if I'd say I loved it, but I think it complemented the rest of the novel very well.
Okay.
So I was happy with it, but I know a lot of other people have said they were not.
So maybe this would make a good book club book.
Oh, yeah.
Since there sounds like the ending will be heavily discussed.
Yes, for sure.
And I actually do have this on my list. I do a monthly blog post about Book of the Month Club every time their picks come out.
Mm-hmm.
I research all the books and provide the commentary I can to help people decide what to get that month.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about getting this one, but then I was nervous because I did not love A Place for Us.
Okay.
Sarah Jessica Parker's first book. But the premise of this one sounded totally up my alley. And I just wanted to wait and hear from some people that I trusted to read it.
Sure.
So now I'm starting to hear good things from some of those people.
Okay.
So it is on my must read before the end of the year TBR list.
Okay. So I'll check in with you no later than December.
Yes.
See if I made it.
Talk about the ending.
Sure.
So that was Golden Child by Claire Adam. And what is your second new book you loved?
My second new book is The Silent Patient by Alex Michaelides. And this one came out February 5th. It's a psychological thriller. And when I first got it from Book of the Month, when I chose it, I was kind of taking a chance on it because I got a little burnt out on psychological thrillers last year. I read a ton of them all in a row, and then I kind of didn't want anything to do with the genre for a while.
I understand. I've been there.
Yeah. So I was like, oh.
That's a genre where I feel like that happens frequently.
It does. Yeah. Because some of them, you know, if they're structured too similarly or if you read a couple that are too predictable all in a row, you kind of get burnt out.
Right.
I decided to give this one a try, and I was glad that I did. The premise is there's a woman, Alicia. She is found in her house after having shot her husband, Gabriel, 5 times.
Oh, dang.
Yep. Right at the top of the novel. That's what we start with.
It's a good opening.
But when she's found, she won't speak. She never speaks again. So she's taken into custody. She ends up in a psychiatric hospital because all through the trial and everything, she hasn't said a word and has given no indication of what happened during the murder. So now it's years later, and this psychotherapist, Theo, he thinks he can get her to open up. He thinks he knows how to make her talk about what happened. So the majority of the book is him trying to get Alicia to communicate in some way and figure out what led her there. Did she actually commit the murder? Was it someone else? If so, what are the circumstances? For a while, I was feeling like this was going to be another predictable one. And I was kind of rolling my eyes. Oh, I know who did it. Why am I reading this? And then I got to the end and I was completely blown out of the water.
Ooh.
I didn't see it coming. Now, I also tend to be, I never predict most of the big endings. Like my husband's the type where if we're watching a movie 10 minutes in, he knows what happens at the end and I haven't seen any of it coming.
Right.
But in this particular instance, I feel like most people will be surprise. It's worth it for the buildup.
And is it surprised in a good way? Like the ending is shocking, but also makes sense? Or is it surprising and outlandish and you're just sort of like, where did this come from?
It's surprising in a good way. I don't like ones that end with some weird out there ending that, and it's surprising, but the author had to reach too far for it.
Yes, yes. That's what I don't like either.
I don't like that either, but it's surprising, but in a way that it makes you go, oh, okay.
Now I get it.
Yes. So I loved that. It was really good.
Okay. So this book, again, I researched for Book of the Month Club.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically landed in the exact same place as I did with Golden Child. Sounds intriguing, but I'm very skeptical about psychological thrillers. I've been burned way too many times.
I know.
So I, again, wanted to just wait until some readers I trusted could give their feedback before I jumped on it. I have figured out that I like psychological thrillers that have like an actual psychologist involved or psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm. And this one certainly does.
Yeah. It's more psychological than thriller.
Yes, definitely.
So that, which makes me think that this one could have the potential to work for me.
That's awesome. I give you a yes vote for this one.
Okay. So that might go on my possible summer books list.
Okay.
So that was The Silent Patient by Alex Michaelides.
I think that's how you say it. Yes.
I'm discovering that pronouncing author names is something that is not my forte.
Yeah, I'm pretty bad at it too.
since starting the podcast, that's become apparent to me.
Yeah, one of my favorite authors is Jodi Picoult, which for this podcast, I had to go online and figure out how to pronounce that in case you asked me about her. So I...
Well, I'm glad you just said that because that is never the way I've pronounced it.
In my head, I don't say it that way, and I probably never will.
It's Picoult in my head.
Yes, exactly.
All right, so let's go on to one book you did not love.
One book I did not love is 1Q84 by Haruki Murakami.
Yes.
I do not DNF a lot of books. Do not finish.
Right.
I mean, I could probably count them on one hand.
Wow, in your life?
Yes.
Oh, man.
I know. I'm like that stodgy reader who's like, if I start this book, I'm going to finish it. And I could not finish this book.
Well, it's also the length of like three regular sized books.
It is. It's about 1,200 pages. So that didn't help. But I tried real hard. It came to me with so many good recommendations. And if you go on Goodreads, there are so many glowing recommendations for this book. So
yeah,
if you're interested in this book, don't not read it just because I said this.
I've read it.
And what did you think?
I really liked it. But it was, I think, before I started blogging and became a much more impatient reader.
Okay.
I wonder what I would think now. And I've read another one of his books since then, which I did not like.
Okay.
It's a weird book.
It is a weird book. The characters were strange for me. And
they were definitely strange.
The storyline was all over the place. And there's one book blogger, if she's listening to this, she's laughing. Monica at Lovely Bookshelf.
Yes.
On the wall. She loves Murakami. Hi, Monica. And when I didn't like this book, she always laughs whenever, because I'm always like, oh, I tried Murakami once and it didn't work for me. And I've been so afraid to try his other books.
Right.
Just because of this one. But I feel like I need to, because I know he has so many good novels out there. But yeah, this one was tough for me. It just didn't come together for me. And I remember I think I slogged through it for like 3 or 4 months before I finally was like, time to give up the ghost on this one.
Like, how far did you make it?
It's broken up into three books. And I think I made it through the first two. So I made it 2/3 of the way through. And then I just couldn't do it anymore.
I'm trying to think of how to even describe what it's about. And it's so weird that I can't even put it into words. It does deal with alternate realities.
It does. It's like something happens to the main character. I believe her name's Aomame.
I might be pronouncing
that wrong.
Yeah.
But she starts to notice these little subtle differences in the world that makes her think this might be an alternate reality or something strange is going on. But then it coincides with the story of this other guy named Tango, who's a writer. And their lives sort of come together. So there's like a romance part of it. There's so much that I can't put it in one summary. Right.
I agree.
I mean, if you like epic novels that, and you're into kind of the surrealism, fantasy a little bit.
It is a little bit fantasy.
It is.
I would call it literary fantasy.
I agree. I would agree with that.
Which is normally not my thing.
It's hit or miss for me. Sometimes I'm into fantasy stuff. I was going to talk about The Night Circus a little bit with my next book, but that one has a little bit of fantasy in it, and I adore that book.
Gotcha.
So sometimes it works for me, sometimes it doesn't, but in this case, it didn't.
So that was 1Q84 by Haruki Murakami. Oh, and because you're a runner, I do want to recommend his memoir. Have you read that?
No, and everybody recommends it to me.
I did love that.
That I know. I need to read that. I need to come off my Murakami fright and read that book because so many people have mentioned it to me.
It's really short.
Yeah.
And actually, I think I listened to it on audio and I liked it on audio. It's about running, but it's also about life and about the life of a writer.
Gotcha.
And he's got a cool backstory. He sounds like a guy that I would get along with.
I need to read that one because I think that would certainly work better for me than more of like the fantasy surrealism. Yeah.
You know what? As weird as his novels are, he came across as so normal in his memoir.
That's really funny.
So I think you should try that one.
Okay.
To please Monica.
I will.
All right. So one upcoming release that you're excited about. This is always my favorite category because I put so many new books on my TBR list from my guests.
The one I am most excited for, and it does not come out until November.
That's the longest one we've gotten yet.
I know. It's killing me.
That's all right.
It's The Starless Sea by Aaron Morgenstern.
Oh, by the author of The Night Circus.
That's why I mentioned The Night Circus. So I love The Night Circus. It's another one of my favorites, but she has not released a novel since then. So as soon as I heard The Starless Sea was coming out, I was like, yes, I need to read this.
How long ago was The Night Circus published?
Oh, I don't know. It's been a long time. I mean, I want to say at least maybe 10 years.
Wow.
I mean, I have certain authors that I love their books, and then I'm like, when are they releasing another one? And I keep Googling their name, and I can't find anything about it. And then finally they release something, and you're so relieved.
Yes.
So I looked it up. It says 2012, but that might have just been the paperback. So even a little before that. So it's been a while, but so now she has a new one coming out.
Yeah, 2011.
And it comes out in November. Okay. Comes out in November. And from what I've seen of the synopsis, it's about a grad student up in Vermont, back in this abandoned part of a library. He finds this book with all these strange magical tales in it. But as he's reading through it, he finds that one of them is about him and things that have happened to him in his life.
Wow.
And so then the story kind of snowballs from there as he tries to figure out, how did this story end up in here and what is it all related to? So it sounds very much in the vein of The Night Circus, where there's kind of some fantasy elements to it.
Right.
But with a story that still, like I said, I don't always get into a novel with a heavy fantasy component to it, but this one sounds like something I'd be really into.
Gotcha. And I know, I feel like so many people loved The Night Circus.
Yes.
This will be a big time release.
I agree.
In November.
Yes.
And it's interesting that they're publishing it in November. I would have thought it would have been September or October.
Yeah. So people have time to buy it before the holidays and things like that. But
have you tried to get a galley of this yet?
I haven't. But now that you've told me that Insta reviewing is legit, maybe I'll try.
By the time this episode airs, my episode with Ashley Spivey will have already aired.
Okay.
And The Night Circus is her all-time favorite book.
I love it.
And she talked about it on the podcast, but it was not one of the official books she shared because she said she talks about it so much in her Facebook group and on Instagram that she wanted to share books she hadn't talked about as much that she loved.
Mm-hmm.
But she did manage to sneak it in there, for sure.
Yeah, it was worth sneaking in. I love that book. That's kind of why I didn't mention it in my top two backlist ones either, because I'm like, oh, I already talk about that book a lot.
Totally. I understand that. And it's such a well-known book, too, that
it
I
is.
Feel like many people will have probably already heard about it and read it if they wanted to.
Agreed.
All right. So that was The Starless Sea by Erin Morgenstern, who is the author of The Night Circus, and it's coming on November 5th.
Yes.
And it's long. It's 500 pages, I just saw.
Oh, I didn't see that. That's all right. More for me to love.
More for you to love. And not even half the length of 1Q84.
That's true.
So let's end the episode, as we always do, by playing Rate It.
All right.
This is a lightning round game where I throw out five bookish things, and you rate each thing either 1 or 5 stars, and you cannot use 2, 3, or 4 stars.
Okay.
So just like you would rate a book, except love, hate.
Got it. I can do that. Hopefully.
I think so. All right. Number one, sticking to your TBR list.
1, because I jump around too much.
Yep. I was guessing you would say 1.
Yeah.
I'm actually more of a 5. I stick pretty closely to my list. I don't know that I like that I'm a 5, but I think that is what I am.
That's okay. Neither of us is running out of things to read, and that's the important thing.
No, and I'm liking a lot of what I read. Now that I've fine-tuned how I pick books, I feel like my reading quality has improved so much.
That's awesome.
All right, number 2, running/triathlon how-to books.
5. I love them.
What's your favorite one?
Well, I don't know if it's a how-to book, but Dina Caster's memoir that came out last year, Let Your Mind Run, is phenomenal.
Tara from Running and Reading loved that one as well.
Yes.
I think it actually made her top 10 of the year.
Yeah, it's really good. I've read a lot of running and sports memoirs, but that's definitely one of the best.
Maybe I should listen to that one.
I bet it would be awesome. I wonder if she narrates it. But either way, it would be phenomenal. Well, as far as how to, How Bad Do You Want It by Matt Fitzgerald is
okay.
Really good.
And is that running or triathlon?
So it's actually, it could go for either.
Yep.
Or just sports in general.
Yep.
It's more of a sports psychology book.
Ooh.
Yeah, building grit in your running and like finding out what your actual limits are and things like that. It's really good.
Ooh, okay. That sounds like something I would like. I liked the actual book, Grit.
I did too.
All right, number 3, purging your physical book collection.
5. I always feel good. When I did Marie Kondo them last year, it was hard, but it did feel good to kind of cut back on the things that I knew I wasn't going to read anytime soon.
Are there any books that you purged that you've regretted purging?
No.
Okay.
And it's been a year since I did it, so... yeah, I think that's a good sign.
Yep, good sign. All right, number 4, books that are especially hyped before you read them.
That's tough. I'm going to go with 1 because the hype, I feel, affects my reading experience too much, and that always bugs me.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I also feel like I am more apt to give a high rating to a book that takes me by surprise.
Yes.
That's so good. And I wasn't really expecting it to be that, or not expecting it to be good, but I just didn't have any buildup in my head.
Yeah. I feel like it's so much harder with hyped up books. Well,
right.
You know that I recently read Where the Crawdads Sing, and that one was so hyped up for me.
So hyped up.
So hyped up. And I liked it, but I feel like my expectations were so high that I just couldn't love it.
Right.
I felt bad about it, but I truly think it was because of the hype. Because if I had just read it in isolation, it probably would have been different for me.
So I read it before the hype.
And that definitely made a difference for you, I bet.
Yes, and I did love it. And it shocked me that I loved it because I can tick off on my hand all these elements that are in the book that I normally hate to find in my reading.
Yeah.
But somehow it all worked for me. I could not put it down. And I read it before it was published, and it was sent to me unsolicited from a publisher. I didn't even seek it out. So I definitely had no expectations for it. I was sort of like, I'll try it, but if I don't like it in the first 10 pages, this thing's going down.
Yeah.
Because that's what I do.
I wish I could be more like you sometimes.
Guess how many books I DNF'd last year?
I think you posted about it, and I can't remember the number, but I was like, wow, how many?
I think it was 34. It was definitely over 30.
That's impressive.
Well, maybe I'm a little too ruthless. I don't know.
We're both on opposite extremes.
Yes. So we'll cancel each other out.
Yes.
Okay, number five, reading off your own shelves. I already know how you're going to answer this.
Oh, five.
It's funny. I didn't know what you were going to talk about earlier before when I put all these together.
Yeah.
So sometimes that serendipity works out.
It does. No, I love it. It was funny because when you told me we were going to talk about TBR lists, it was on a day where I was getting the kids ready for school, and then we were about to leave, and I had a doctor's appointment right after, and I was like, oh, I don't have a book to read, because you got to have a book to read if you're at the doctor's.
Oh, obviously.
And I just ran up to my shelf and grabbed one at random. I just read Redeployment by Phil Clay, and that was how I chose it, because I was just like, I need a book today, and I grabbed it, and it was awesome. It was like, oh, this is just what I feel like reading today.
So now that you read Redeployment, you need to read Waiting for Eden.
Oh, okay. I'll add that one to my list. I don't think I've heard of that one.
It's very, very short.
Okay.
But it is utterly gut-wrenching.
I will definitely read it.
But it's so good.
Good to know.
All right. Before we go, tell everybody where they can find you online.
I am primarily on Instagram at TheWellReadRunner. My blog link is still up, but I haven't updated in ages. So if you want to read my old reviews, it's at TheWellReadRedhead.com. But yeah, Instagram is definitely the easiest place to find me.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I so loved having you.
Thanks for having me. It was so much fun.
On next week's episode, Catherine, otherwise known as Read with Cat on Instagram, is joining me. And we talk book clubs. She has been in the same book club for over 10 years, which is very rare. What it's like to live with cystic fibrosis. She was diagnosed when she was 16. And, of course, she shares her book recommendations. So look forward to that and talk to you next week. Thanks so much for listening to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. You can find show notes with all the books mentioned in the episode, purchase links, and linked timestamps at sarahsbookshelves.com/podcast. And that's Sarah with an H. I'd love to hear your comments, feedback, and suggestions, especially since we're just starting out. Find me online on my blog, sarahsbookshelves.com, on Twitter at Sarah's Shelves, on Instagram at Sarah's Bookshelves, and via email at sarahsbookshelves@gmail.com. Happy reading!